Hi, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got a dynamic hour for you. And for you gals out there, well, we're in for a bit of a surprise. My guests would have been scheduled. We had a cancellation unexpectedly. They called me this morning, and so we have a wonderful guest that we are going to be talking with today. And before I go into that information, I want you to know you need to have a pad of paper and a pen handy. Of course, that's almost standard with the Donna Sebo Show, because we have so much stuff we share with you. You want to be able to write the information down if you can. And one of those important points is our toll-free number of 877-876-5227 here at bbsradio.com. Also, if you're in Canada, the toll-free number is 888-810-8322. Well, having said that and putting that out there, and we'll be repeating that for you later on in the hour when you'll be able to call in, I want to introduce my guest. John McGee is his name, and we're going to be talking about something that most people tiptoe around. It's very difficult to bring this up, but the title of his book, I have to tell you, really caught my attention. It's 21 Ways Women in Management Shoot Themselves in the Foot. John McGee, welcome from Denver, Colorado. It's so nice to have you on the show, and thank you for being willing to be a last-minute guest.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
John, as I was telling you off the air, when I first got your book, I thought, am I really going to want to read this? And I have to be very honest, I had an attitude when I first opened it up. And you are a certified executive coach. You've been for, well, almost 30 years in executive suites and boardrooms across North America. You really are very familiar with what it takes to be an executive today. You have your own consultancy, Business Success Coach. And you've worked with all kinds of companies, big ones, small ones. But you definitely have an attitude of your own. You feel like, although we've made major steps in equal rights for men and women, less than 4% of America's largest companies employ women as senior executives. John, how did you decide, or when did you decide, that you needed to get this information out in front of women? Why did you feel it was necessary? You know, most guys don't want the women to know about this. What makes you so different?
I think you're probably right about that comment about most guys. Having been a leader of a company that was doing over $1 billion in sales and had offices across the country, I had a chance to see what took place when women were put into the positions of leading various departments and divisions of that organization. And it caused me to start doing some research with our human resources people. And the research became very clear, Donna, that when you have women running organizations, in most cases they are more successful on the soft skills, those issues of communication and interdisciplinary relationships. But just as important, the ROI, the return on investment for the company, is better. So it became a challenge to figure out ways that we could put more women into positions of leadership, and then as I set up my own practice after leaving that organization, I made it my goal. I think it's entirely to society's benefit to have more women running more organizations.
Now, there would be those in the opposite camp, and I've known and met many individuals in my years of being associated with media. The attitude that a woman should know her place, and I know that guys have a tough time too. This, the workplace, no matter where you are, guy or gal, it's tough. But women have had such a difficult time. We, like you said, we've made some big strides. Here you've put this book together, and one of the first things that you start out with is having a personal life plan. Tell us what a personal life plan is, because most women have been indoctrinated that the personal plan should be marriage and children and retire at 65 and live happily ever after.
Right, and we know that's not really very successful for a lot of women. For many women it is, but for a lot of women it is not. A personal life plan is simply taking a look at where you'd like to be and what it is that's most satisfying for you, Donna. I believe that each of us, male or female, have really three separate aspects of our lives. One is the personal and family, and I think traditionally women do a real good job of looking after their families, as you just noted, not necessarily as good a job of looking after those things that replenish them and make them feel most fulfilled. That would be the personal side. But in addition, the other two aspects of one's life are career, going out and making money and doing something that you enjoy, and being a financial manager. We don't do a very good job of teaching anybody how to look after their finances to make sure they've got what they need when they need it. So this life plan is just a matter of putting down where you'd like to go and how you're going to get there, and then managing it. The research on this one was also pretty clear. It said that 86% of people who have a life plan, who take the time to say where they want to be by when, have more satisfying lives than those that don't. And if you look around on them, most people at some time at some point of the day will kind of question what it is that they're doing and the satisfaction they're getting from it. And I don't think it's any coincidence. It's because they don't have a life plan.
Now, I would like to pose a question to you. When someone's doing a life plan, it is so easy to say, oh, I wish, I desire, this is what I would like to achieve. How can someone find a team player that can keep them in that position of thinking and focus? Women typically, especially if they have family, I can think of a professional woman I just talked with last night who was saying, I've got my family, she's running the kids around to all the sports activities, plus holding down a full-time job, she's concerned about her husband, she's got all of these different things on her plate, and she's miserable with where she is. Now, here you have a situation that hundreds of thousands of women are going through on a daily basis, and the attitude still is, well, sweetie, that's just the way it is. Take it as it is. How can someone who is in that kind of a situation be able to look at having a plan? Because so many of them think they've got to wait till the kids are grown up or until their husband is retired. I mean, we come up with all kinds of things. What would you recommend?
Well, the first thing is to take an honest look at what it is that you're doing, why you're doing it, and does it really satisfy you? Many cases, both genders, but particularly women, have been brought up with certain social values instilled very early in their heads about what it is that they're supposed to be doing and how they're supposed to be behaving. And they end up looking around and saying, you know, is this all there is? And perhaps trying to find some strength or some happiness in a bottle of wine at the end of the day. That's not what's going to make them happy. Looking for spirit in the wrong place, I would say. What we've got to do is just take a look at what it is that makes us happy. And a good starting point, and one that I recommend for my clients, Donna, is to say, if suddenly you had no obligations, no financial commitments, no concerns from family or loved ones, you could wake up tomorrow and do anything that you wanted to do, what would you be doing? And it's a daydream that, you know, really helps get people motivated to take a look at what it is that they would be doing if they could be doing. And then you sit back and take a look at the reasons why you're not doing that. I think the statement that we often hear from people who are very successful, regardless of what they've chosen to do, is that they are passionate about what they're doing. And I know that's an overworked word, but when we are passionate, we find ways to get there and to do what we want. And putting it down on paper is a good way to concretize what it is that we want.
You, and I want to be sure that we cover a number of the portions of your book. And for those of you that have just turned in, John McGee is a business success coach. His wonderful book is called 21 Ways Women in Management Shoot Themselves in the Foot. In the cover of this book, you have the faces of seven women. It could be seven women from any part of the country or the world, for that matter. And as a male, he is addressing the issues of women becoming professionals. Now, there are those women that really don't want to, and that's fine. But we that want to be professionals, we that are professionals, and we want to move forward. This is a book that you should have in your library because it's going to push your buttons in special ways. You have a chapter dealing with misunderstanding the business circle of success. Explain that.
I think this is a is one that is very commonly misunderstood by women in management. There are books and there are schools in the 80s that taught managers or prospective business people that the best thing that one can do when they're in a job is to look after their own team, to focus on making sure that their team has got the tools, the information, the whatever resources that they need to become successful. I found that in most organizations in North America, and I've got clients on both sides of the border, Canada and the U.S., that doesn't work. What usually works best is looking after the boss's needs. When we recognize that we were hired to serve a purpose in an organization and that that boss made a decision to bring us on board, or perhaps the boss has changed, but at any rate, we still report to someone else. When we look after their needs first and help them become more successful, they quickly clue into that, and they start wanting to give us more resources, time, and effort because they know that we're helping make them successful, and that's bubbling up the organization. So by looking after their needs first, we get the resources that we can hand down to our players, our team, and help them become more successful at the same time. So that's the circle of success.
Now, I will tell you, having been in the positioning of being self-employed as well as having been the employee working for people, and at one time I was under six bosses, they're always...
Poor you.
Excuse me?
Poor you.
Yes, that was a trip. I think a visit at a psychiatric hospital would have been more fun. Anyway, to be able to do what you're suggesting, you then may end up dealing with people that have an attitude saying, what are you doing, sucking up to the boss? Now, excuse me, but that's the language that often is used in offices.
You're right. Let's bear in mind that each of us have got two things to do when we're an employee in an organization. The first thing is to do the job that we're hired to do, and to do it in the best possible way. Trying to buck the system, trying to tell your boss or multiple bosses the right way, and I say that in quotes, to do the job is counterproductive. The best thing that you can do is do the job the way it's described for you and try to follow the mission plan of the company and the business statements. If you do that, you'll be recognized and you'll get more tools and more resources to help your team do some of the projects that you'd like to see done as well. For those people who believe that you are a quote-unquote brown noser for doing that, that's they're making those comments. They're probably not likely to be going up the organizational ladder, and they may be making those comments about other people after you've left.
So that leads me right into another part of your book, which I know this is real. I've been here, done it. I've interacted with so many other women that have gone through this. You have one of your chapters dealing with not separating the personal from the professional. Developing a thicker skin. This is something that is so tough. I know men that have a problem with this, but men typically don't have the attitudes that the women will have relative to this. And there's a big difference when you're dealing in this. Cover a little bit of that for us.
Okay, well, let's talk about the guy's attitude first. In many cases, if you talk to fellas, they'll tell you that they're like a baseball player. They're like a hired gun. They'll work for whatever team is paying them the most money. And they treat their position in the organization relatively objectively, because if someone came along and offered them a boatload of money, they'd be more than happy to quit. Women are more likely to identify with the organizations that they're employed with. They often seek out organizations that are that show values and represent the kind of values that they would like to be associated with. So immediately they've got a more emotional vested interest in it. Secondly, they are more prone to become friendly with the people with whom they're working. They take things personally, putting often the individual ahead of the position. Women are less hierarchical, and by that I mean that an organization has a hierarchy like a military structure. It's a traditional
mm-hmm.
masculine structure. Women are not like that as often in business. They're more prone to do things that are right for the organization without regard to titles and status. So they become vested in what's going on. They start treating it more personally. On a separate but equally as important point, though, Don, I'll also say that women are more likely to use where they work as husband-hunting territory.
Now that is a good point. That's something that many, many women will try to put themselves, not all. Most of the women I'm associated with, that's not what they're interested in. But there are those women, especially if they're younger and they're husband-hunting, they say, well, let me go into those environments where that's going to be. That's true.
Yes. And getting caught up in a personal relationship in business is never a good practice for either gender. But
absolutely.
Yes. And it usually ends up far worse for the female than it does for the male.
Mm-hmm. Without question. That has happened so many times. I once listened to a speaker that said, well, it's important, you know, you should date people that you work with and so on and so forth. But the reality is that there is a line there, and I have yet to see that line disappear. And it is something that I think men and women both need to be very prudent about, because it really, if the relationship doesn't work, everybody in the office knows about it, all kinds of things are affected, people in management will hear different things, and it's just a terrible mess.
Gosh, I totally agree with you, and unfortunately, you know, as you related earlier about stereotyping not breaking down as quickly as it should, unfortunately for the woman, she'll usually end up with some sort of a scarlet letter on
yes.
her, and the guy will still be seen as, you know, just a manly man.
Right. That's exactly correct. And that's very hard to get across to many young women. I think the mature women, they can understand that. But even with mature women, there's such a confusion. And like you said, for all of the changes that have evolved, there's a lot that hasn't changed. And I like what you said, that when you're in a situation, if you will try to think the way a male will think, and many women will say, well, how am I going to do that? But if you can be aware that the male has an attitude, don't take this personal, this is just business, and if you can develop that attitude, you have a better chance of surviving, because then those people that will want to utilize that part of the feminine self and make you feel as if you are a victim or, gee whiz, you're not capable of this, that, or the other, you're going to look at it and say, hey, this is just business, nothing personal.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's not something that I would encourage if a woman was setting up her own business. But if she's dealing in a masculine culture, she's got
mm-hmm.
to behave and understand the rules of the game.
Well, I think when a woman is in business for herself, she feels like she's going to pretty much be able to make her own rules.
Yes.
And I think any entrepreneur generally is going to feel that way. But even when you are in business for yourself, depending on what kind of business you're in, if you are going to be in a male environment, then you need to be aware of certain things. And we don't think the same, for heaven's sakes.
That's right. That's right. As boys, you know, the guys who are in business today were brought up that the word no means convince me. If they were pulled off the ice in a hockey game or a football game, the first thing they started telling the coach was, they know what they did wrong and put me back out there. So later in life, when a woman runs into a guy, and you hear this comment all the time, what is it about no that they don't understand? Well, it's because they've been taught that that means convince me.
Mm-hmm. Now, my guest today is John M. McGee. We are talking about 21 ways women in management shoot themselves in the foot. And ladies, I want you to know, and guys, if you're listening to this and you have a lady in your life that really needs to build up her self-confidence or understand the business world better, she's in a corporate environment and she just feels like she's beaten down, this is a manual, if you will. That's perhaps a rather dry way of describing it, because it's got a lot of good substance in it, but it's something that women can use. And if you've got a young person that is wanting to go out and participate in life, this is a wonderful book to utilize. It makes them aware and prepared. You have something about communication here. We're talking about the differences between men and women. You say women wait their turn to talk, then they talk to think. Men interrupt. They think to talk. How did you come up with that?
It was really just kind of watching people in boardrooms and in executive meetings, and then kind of translating that to what I saw around me with daughter, wife, friends, etc. You know, I was really lucky when I started in business a long time ago. I had a female boss, and I saw how difficult it was for her to make her point in meetings, and I heard what the boys said after she left the room, too. And it really sort of intrigued me, and I started watching that. Women often have a tendency to process out loud, and it's difficult for guys because guys like the answer first, and then how did you get there afterwards? So the breakdown in communication in a boardroom or a meeting room, in any business communication, it's particularly important that we talk like the person whom we're talking to understands. Guys have a tendency to make the point, and then this is how I got there if they're asked. Women do it the other way. And as a consequence, you'll often hear guys, when the women aren't in the room, say, oh, well, there she goes again, blah, 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 blah. And she's trying to process and explain why she got there, and it's just, you know, two misunderstandings.
Let me ask you a question. How could someone in management, a male, develop an understanding of this about a female? Because really, when you're in management, you want the people that are around you to be your team that's going to be incredibly successful. How can someone who is a boss, a male boss, when they have someone that is a female that is doing this kind of processing, how can they learn? What would they need to do? Become a better listener?
Yes. I believe that the further up the ranks most managers go, and this is particularly important the case for guys, they become worse listeners. They start believing that I am so clever, there's not much that I can learn from other people. So when I'm working with those type of bosses, guy bosses, you know, I really try to get them to understand that their listening skills usually are pretty poor, and that if they didn't surround themselves with people who want to continually glad-hand them and pat them on the back for being so smart, they might learn something and be more effective. We've got a lot to learn, I'm saying we as men, from the way women communicate. You know, the way that they're so equal in their communication really makes them more effective managers than guys.
Women that want to get into management, there are more and more that want to do this positioning. You say there are games. Let me back up a little bit here. Women prefer a flat organizational structure. Men prefer a hierarchy. Women are process-oriented. Men are goal-oriented. Women play with those they like. Men play with those who will win. Women avoid conflict. Men deal with conflict. I don't know. I found a lot of males that don't deal with conflict very well. But they do seem to, in certain situations, especially in a work environment, they seem to respond to it differently. Cover those points a little bit.
Well, let me try to work it backwards so I can remember how you said it. Yeah, you're right. Guys are not very good at dealing with conflict in interpersonal, non-business situations. But because they've been brought up in hierarchical situations, whether it be military or sports or just, you know, dad is the boss in the household in a lot of cases, they get the fact that when they're trained that an issue has come up, that they've got to hit it on the head, deal with it, and put it on the table. Women are less likely to do that. They often believe that by putting it away, it will go away. By working around it, it will evaporate, and that doesn't usually succeed, particularly as one gets into management and then starts working their way up. Personnel problems can either be the easiest things to deal with or the hardest things to deal with. I find that too often female clients tell me that it's the hardest thing to deal with. Those same people may be outstanding in their interpersonal relationships, family, friends, etc., outside of the job.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things that you were talking about there are often a product of the way we nurture and some nature issues, I think. But guys have a tendency to want to bluster their way through things. And when they go into meetings, the first thing they like to do is exchange business cards so they can see who is got the best title and treat him or her accordingly. Women are more likely to kind of listen to who's got the best ideas and respond and act that way. That's kind of working with people who are most effective as opposed to that succumbing to the title issues that guys are more likely to do. I believe the things that you've just delineated, Donna, are a big reason why most business startups today are being made by women, because they're just shrugging their shoulders often and saying, it's not worth the price that I've got to pay to go up the organization ladder here. And that's a big reason why I put this book into print, because I think if they had a guide, if they had some tools, if they had just sort of something that they could look at and kind of understand the way the other gender is looking at them and use that to their benefit, that we'd have more women going up the ladders. And, you know, I just think that's going to be better for our society, as well as North American business is losing its preeminence in so many places. We need more diversity in the executive suites.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think your book, 21 Ways Women in Management Shoot Themselves in the Foot, is so informational, also with some very, very good suggestions. I can think of two professional women that I've been speaking with for off and on for 6 months, and they're dealing with so many of the issues that you bring forth in your book, and I know they're going to be getting the recommendation from me that they get it. My guest is John McGee. John, what is your website so that men and women both can go and see what you have to offer?
Www.businesswomanweb.com. It's woman singular. We also have a separate, another website, Don, if you don't mind, I'll say that one too. It's,
sure.
It's www.businesssuccesscoach.net. On that site, we offer free online coaching programs. So if someone's kind of wondering if they think they would like to understand how to create a life plan, or if they think they'd just like to have, you know, a couple of people's opinions about a roadblock or an obstacle that they're facing, allows them to get that information and test what it'd like be like working with a coach.
All right. So we have two websites here: businesswomanweb.com. That's one. businesssuccesscoach.net. So two different websites, very much conveniently available for you to utilize on businesssuccesscoach.net. If you're in a career environment, you feel like you've got a roadblock, you don't know how the blue blazes to get around it, this is an opportunity for you to find out what you can do. And John, you have just, again, so much wonderful information in here. You go into all kinds of suggestions. You have a 9-step program. You also have some resources for women that are in the back of your book. You really feel that, as you've said so many times during our talk today, that women need to know not only are they qualified and capable, but they need to understand how their thinking can make a difference so that their actions follow accordingly. John McGee, he's a business success coach. His book, 21 Ways Women in Management Shoot Themselves in the Foot. If you're like me, you'll pick up the book, you'll wonder, is this really something that I can use? And by the time you finish, you're going to find it's a resource manual, that's how I'll describe it, that'll come in very handy. John, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for having me, and it was a pleasure meeting you, Donna.
It's been delightful. John M. McKee, that's McKee. If you want to know the correct spelling of his name, 21 Ways Women in Management Shoot Themselves in the Foot. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break in just a few seconds here. Telephone lines will be open, and then you'll be able to chat with me if you like. Telephone numbers to call into, 877-876-5227 here in the U.S. of A. In Canada, you can call in toll-free, 888-810-8322. Don't you go away now. We've got more good things to share. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I want to invite you to call me if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the toll-free numbers here at bbsradio.com, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227, or toll-free from Canada, 888-876-5227. 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And we also have a direct phone line you can call in on, 530-876-9146. And when you call in, all I need from you is your first name or initial. And after that, you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. Now, by the way, for those of you who are regular listeners to the show, and if you're sharing the information about BBS Radio with your friends, we're so delighted. We'd like to invite all of them to come and share listening time with us. Also, I'm going to be in Alaska and New York this month. So if you are in that area, if you have any friends, I'm going to be available for private counseling in New York City as well as Fairbanks and Anchorage, Alaska. You can call me directly to find out my time frame. And then I hope to be in California during October. And I haven't quite nailed down all the time frames on that, but we're working on that right at this as we speak. We're trying to get all of that planned and put into place. So this is going to be one traveling lady, but none of the shows. Well, we're always going to have this show here for you. And you need to know that, though this Friday, we are going to be having a show that's been done in the past because we're going to have the best of Donna. Don't be afraid of listening in or tuning in because you're going to be able to have some wonderful stuff to take away with you. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about 100 Lies About the First Job. And Michael Ball is going to be my guest. You know, he thinks we're too smart to get caught in the games that often are expected or played with a first job. So that's coming up. Now, next week, we're going to be talking with John Weiser about untapped markets. Yes, this is relating to business. And then Timothy Bellavia. This young man is doing something incredible with children. His program is called We Are All the Same Inside. Absolutely fabulous material. This is a wonderful young man who's making a difference in the lives of children in a very special way. If you love dogs, you're not going to want to miss Robin Ackney, her book, 1,000 Best Dog Training Secrets. Very good, very helpful. Also, we're going to be talking with Bob Sedensticker about future heights. If you're like me, sometimes technology leaves you in a mental swirl and whirl. Well, he's going to help level that field of understanding. And then, Jolene Corbin. This is something that will touch your heart and your mind. It's about medical misfits. And this is her story. Fabulous books, the fabulous people, fabulous stories. I want you to know it's my delight to be able to bring these to you because it makes you aware of how much is going on in life. That's what this program is about, empowering you. So as an individual, you know you've got options. How are you going to know if you've got options if you don't hear about it? And that's where radio spreads its magic. And I'm delighted to be able to do that with you. By the way, also, if you have anything to send me in the way of a story, send it along to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. I'm getting so many wonderful emails from people, and I'd love to hear your story. If you have a funny story, if you have a personal story of success or achievement or something that you feel that my audience would enjoy, I'd love to have you share it. Remember, life is about living. Life is about experience, good, bad, or indifferent. And what we need to do is make others aware that there are options to work with, that we do have answers. There are choices that can be made. And there are ways, maybe, of traveling a road or experience in life and coming out a winner. So I want you to be able to have that opportunity. So just send an email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Janine sent me this wonderful story about clay balls. And I thought, this is so nice that it would be delightful to share it with you. And remember, you can give me a call if you'd like to chat at 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. And remember, the second number is for Canadians. There was a man exploring caves by the seashore. In one of the caves, he found a canvas bag with a bunch of hardened clay balls. It was like someone had rolled these clay balls and then left them out in the sun to bake. Didn't look like too much, but they were intriguing. So the fellow took the bag out of the cave with him, and as he strolled along the beach, he would throw the clay balls one at a time out into the ocean as far as he could. He was really having a good time with that. Take one of these little balls, just sort of put them in his hand, and then whew, throw it out as far as he could pitch it. He thought very little about what he was doing. However, he happened to drop one of these clay balls, and it cracked open on a rock. Inside was a beautiful, precious stone. The man got very excited. He started breaking open all of the remaining clay balls that he was carrying. Each contained a similar treasure. He found thousands of dollars worth of jewels in the 20 or so clay balls he had left. Then it dawned on him. He had been on the beach a long time. He had thrown maybe 50 or 60 of these clay balls with their hidden treasure into the ocean waves. Instead of thousands of dollars in treasure, he could have taken home tens of thousands, but he had just thrown it away. And in this story, there is a little bit of a moral. And this is how the moral goes. It's like that with people. We look at someone, maybe even ourselves, and we see the external clay vessel. It doesn't look like much from the outside. It isn't always beautiful and sparkling. So we just sort of discount it. We might see a person as less than important than someone more beautiful or stylish, well-known or wealthy. But we've not taken the time to find the treasure hidden inside that person. And there's a treasure in each and every one of us. If we take the time to get to know the person, and if we ask our higher self to show us the person, that person, the way that we should see them, then the clay begins to peel away and the brilliant gem begins to shine forth. And Janine said, may we not come to the end of our lives and find out that we've thrown away a fortune in friendships because the gems were hidden in bits of clay. May we see the people in our world as they really should be seen. And she said, I'm so blessed by the gems of friendship I have with each of you. Thank you for looking beyond my clay vessel. Isn't that lovely? How often do we look at such a superficial level? Oh, gracious, I think we're all guilty of that. I think we've all done it. What I like to do is play a game every once in a while. And sometimes I play the game in the grocery store. That's the best place I find, because you're standing in line so frequently. It's amazing when you're standing in line how you can turn around to someone that's next to you and give them a smile and say, hi, how are you? Or just start talking, having a little bit of chit-chat. People respond. Do you know that most people walk around without a smile on their face? Have you ever noticed that? Sit in a mall sometime or put yourself in a place where you can do people watching. You watch and you look at them. How many of them do you see standing up straight or walking with a sense of self-confidence, with a smile and their eyes sparkling? How many, male or female? You'll be lucky if you can count a couple on one hand. My husband did this experiment many years ago. I was busy shopping. That's one of my favorite pastimes. I absolutely love to shop. And he said, well, I think I'll just sit and watch people. And I came by seeing how he was doing, because I had a couple other stops that I had to make after stopping in this one store. And he said, you know, it really fascinates me. I have watched I don't know how many people in this busy mall, and I think I've seen maybe three or four out of the dozens that have gone past me. So I said, well, that's very interesting. He said, sit down, he said, watch with me for a while. And I did. He was right. Very few people took the time to smile. Most had their heads down or their brows were furrowed. They were sad. They're very sad. Remember, you carry your light with you, that sparkling gem, everywhere you go. Nobody's going to know that it's even there unless you turn it on. And a smile just lights up everybody. It's amazing. And even though there may be some very difficult times and there may be some difficult moments, when you can make light of it and or you can make a positive comment, or even easier, just smile, oh my goodness, it creates magic and it creates a shift in people's thinking so quickly. It happened to me once when I was at a grocery store. Like I said, this is where I like to do my experiments so many times. And I was on a business trip, and I was at this one major grocery store, standing in line. The checker was just so hassled and had been dealing with people for I don't know how many hours, and a lot of them weren't particularly nice. So I came up, and I looked at the person straight in the eye, and I said, good morning. This person did a double take and just looked at me like they couldn't believe that there was a smiling face in their line. And they said, good morning. And they broke out in this smile. In that split second, a shift had been made in their mentality. And they turned back and looked again and said, you know, you look so familiar to me. I feel like I know you. I said, oh, really? So you can try the experiment, and it's amazing. A simple thank you, but say it with sincerity. Remember, you are a light in and of yourself. You've got a magic that nobody else has. But how's somebody going to know about that magic unless you let it demonstrate itself? And boy, a smile is a great way to do it. And sometimes, remember, when people are grumpy, you don't know, they might be ill. I've met people that have been down and not feeling very good, and sometimes they've had some particular tragedies. Maybe someone in their family has passed away. You never know what's going on in someone else's world. So don't be afraid to let your light shine. You make a difference. You make a difference in my life. You may not think so, but you do. You can make a difference not only in yours, but in the life of everybody who's passed you across. You're significant. This is Donna Sebo. I've got some other good things that I want to share with you and some very special animals I want to tell you the story about, and also about a $10 million and sorry X Prize. Have you ever heard of that? I hadn't. I want to share some of that detailed information with you, too. And if you want to give me a buzz to chat, let me light up your life with a little of intuitive insight. Call me at 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. There was a $10 million Ansari X Prize that was given to the first non-governmental team to launch a rocket into space. And out of that, two spin-offs have occurred. There's what's called an M Prize, and it could stand for many things like $1 million, prize money, or even medicine. The field of science hopes that it's going to revolutionize something. It's really standing for Methuselah, the old biblical character whose name is synonymous with longevity. The prize was set up by the University of Cambridge biogerontologist Aubrey de Grey. And we'll find out more about this in just a little while. When we come back, we'll be telling you how things are going to go with this M Prize and also something about centennial challenges. This is Donna Sebo. Don't you go away now. We're going to be back in just a moment. So we'll share some more good things with you. 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. We'll be right back. Hi, Donna Sebo here. Now, by the way, I want to remind you here at bbsradio.com, we have archives that are available for your listening pleasure, and we're working hard at trying to get those archives set up so that they are going to be current with the show, so that for your listening pleasure, you're going to be able to go in and hear just about anything or anybody that you want to listen to that's on BBS Radio. Now, I was talking to you about M Prize. Now, the prize, again, set up by the University of Cambridge by Aubrey de Grey, is going to be going to the scientific team that successfully extends the life or reverses the aging of mice. What works for rodents, he hopes, will someday work for humans. Well, they've been part of scientific experiments for just about as long as we've been doing them. How will the winner be chosen? All the team has to do is extend a lab mouse's life beyond the current record of 4.98 years. Now, in the life of a mouse, 4.98 years is equivalent to a 150-year-old human. Quite a challenge. Also, NASA has added two contests to stimulate exploration of our solar system, both aimed at developing a space elevator. The Tether Challenge dares teams to develop super strong string, while the Beam Power Challenges encourages ideas for transmitting power wirelessly. And there's a $50,000 purse that goes with each one of those. NASA is going to be spending like $80 million on technology prizes over the next 5 years. So that's just a little bit of information for those of you who are scientifically inclined and love to invent. There's always opportunity to do this. Now, don't forget, I'm going to be in Anchorage, Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska, and New York City this month. If you want more information, go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you'll have my itinerary that will be set up for you. And again, our newsletter is up. and you're going to be able to go in and check in on that. And if you want to subscribe, just send me an email at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Could your pet become a therapist? Therapy animals are just so fabulous. I've had the privilege of knowing some people that have worked with therapy dogs. These animals just do such a wonderful job, and there's so many different levels of being able to use them. And I've got a couple of stories here I'd love to share. But if you have a pet and you would love to be able to bring some joy, happiness, and love into other people's lives, well, if you've got a pet of your own and you'd like to do this, all you have to know is that if he or she loves people and has a great personality, and that includes not just dogs, but cats and birds and ferrets, just about any animal that is friendly towards people can make a wonderful therapy pet. Bunnies are fabulous. Animals have a way of reaching out to people and communicating with them. And you know what? So many times when people are in these nursing homes or they're in various facilities, having these animals allows them to feel a love and a sense of communication that's just incredible. Now, your pet would need to accept friendly strangers and must be comfortable with unfamiliar faces. Also, the animal needs to, or bird or ferret or whatever, needs to sit politely for petting, and they must enjoy it. The animal needs to really just say, oh, I'm right in my right place. This is cool. And they need to be on some kind of a leash so that they're just not running all over the place. And they need to be able to obey simple commands and also get along with other animals that might be visiting the same facility at the same time. And they need to have an easygoing nature because a sudden noise could cause an animal to be upset, but should not cause a major panic by the animal. And it's a particular temperament. But, oh, my goodness, what a difference they make. Now, I want to talk about a little doxy. This little doxy is absolutely amazing, and his name is Hans, and he's been called the Wonder Dog. And I've got a picture of Hans in front of me. And at the Florida Hospital in Oceanside, the nurses just absolutely love to see Hans come in because they have a lot of patients at the hospital. This is a rehab center that are trying to get well, recover from strokes and falls, and they just, it's so easy for them to give up. Well, when Hans, when Hans comes in, boy, does he make a difference. You know, this little guy sees 40 to 50 people a day. And this was something that I don't think the owner of Hans ever thought was going to happen. What developed with Hans caused him to become a therapy dog? Well, Hans lost movement and feeling in his hind legs. Now, this is a particular spinal condition that is known to affect doxies, and they can't do anything about it. They just don't know what to do for doxies. However, Hans didn't seem to care, even though he was dragging his back half and it was causing him to be sort of scraped up. He kept moving. Nothing was going to stop this little guy. Well, his owner, Ann Huber, she found him a doggy wheelchair online, and it is just absolutely precious. So she puts his little bottom in this rolling cart. He's got a license plate on the back of this rolling cart. It's red, and it says Hans. Man, when that was given to him, you can't stop this dog. He is absolutely on the go all the time. So she takes him into the Florida hospital, and she takes him in twice a week, and it has made such a difference. When they see this little guy who's moving around in his own portable wheel setup, and nothing is going to stop him, it inspires them. This little doxy is making a difference in people's lives. And his owner, Ann, says he inspires them to go on because when they see Hans, who is disabled because of this particular disease that affected his spine, if that little doxy can do it, then I can do it myself. Isn't that a wonderful story? And Hans, and there's so many other animals that I've gotten information about. There's horses, there's dogs, there's cats, there's birds, and of course I'm not able to share very much of them with you, but just that one for today. But I'll be sharing more with you as we go along. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a wonderful hour, and I'm so delighted that you've been able to share this time with me. Tell your friends about the Donna Sebo Show on bbsradio.com, or we're here with you every afternoon, 3 to 4 Pacific time, and 5 to 6 if you're in Central, and 6 to 7 if you're East Coast time. Remember, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Who you are makes a difference. Don't be afraid to let your light shine, because your light is one of a kind, and we need every bright beam in this world we possibly can get. Have a magnificent day, and don't forget, tomorrow, well, we're going to be finding out about how to deal with that job that you're in. Maybe it's your first job. We'll give you more good details. Donna Sebo here. God bless. Have a fabulous day. I'll be talking with you tomorrow. Bye for now.